This is Cave Scott Allen of Otico.com.
This is Kevin Dente.
This is John Galloway.
This is Scott Kuhn from LazyCoder.com.
Hey, this is John. This show was recorded at the end of August. The Cake dev team had a crazy busy September, and so stay tuned at the end of the show, and there'll be a short footnote, and I'll just kind of fill you in on anything that's new and updated since the show was recorded. So just a reminder, keep listening at the very end. Thanks. Hello and welcome to Herding Code. This episode is being recorded August 26, 2016. We're talking to Gary Park and Matthias Carlson from the Cake Build Group. Can you guys introduce yourselves?
Sure. Yeah, I'll go first. My name is Gary Park. I've been working on the Cake project for a little over almost a year now. I joined Matthias and Patrick, Patrick who founded the project, and Matthias joined slightly after that. So I'm the new guy on the team.
Yeah, Matthias Carlson. I joined the project in June 2004, and it was just a couple of months after the first commit.
Wow.
I started bugging Patrick with issues and pull requests.
Cool. Okay, so first let's start with kind of the high level thing. What is Cake? What do I use it for?
Yeah, so Cake is a cross-path build system that uses the Roslyn compiler and C-sharp scripting, much like Grunt or Gulp, but this uses C-sharp. And it works on both Windows, Mac, and Linux. Currently, it uses Mono on the Mac and Linux, but we're almost done with the core CLR port, and now we have a unified experience across all platforms.
Great. Okay. And then one thing from digging into this too is the integration with a lot of like other systems, right? So I can set up a build, obviously build locally, but I can also do like CI and stuff like that as well.
Yeah, almost certainly. I mean, well, that's one of the core premises of Cake. I mean, the idea is that the build that you want to run on your own developer machine is going to be as close, if not exactly the same, to the build that you'll run on some continuous integration server. So be it Team City, or it be AppVeyor, or it be MyGet, or it be any of these online build systems, we want that script that you're running, the build, to be as close to that as possible. Therefore, if something doesn't work locally, it's not going to work when you try and push it up to that CI system. So a case in point of that is that Cake itself builds on as many as Matthias can make it work on. Right now we've got Cake building Cake on, I think it's 10 online CI systems. Now, that might seem like a bit of overkill, but I mean, what we want to do as the Cake project is make sure that there aren't any issues running on those systems. So we build Cake with Cake on as many as we can.
Yeah. And it definitely makes your GitHub page look pretty cool. You've got like so many badges.
We do like badges. So yeah. There's lots of badges on the homepage there.
Yeah. Wow. Cake and badges. Okay. So, my first, like, kind of, you know, digging into this, your documentation is pretty nice, which is always nice to see. So there's the kind of getting started where you clone a repo and you get a build PS1, a build Cake, and then a tools packages config. So you run the PowerShell script and then a bunch of magic happens. So what is that magic that's happening?
Well, basically, either build PS1 for PowerShell or build SH for Bash, if you're depending on your platform, and that's just a bootstrapper to fetch Cake. So basically, it will fetch Cake from NuGet, and once that's off, it will launch the build.cake file. So those are just bootstrappers for just making the experience easy to launch Cake.
Okay, and just while we're mentioning it in passing, does the PowerShell on Linux thing, do you think that'll have an impact on what you guys are doing, or is that like, is your shell script simple enough that it's probably just easy to stay with build SH?
I mean, the bootstrappers that we currently have, they are, we provide what we call kind of the example bootstrappers, and they do exactly what Matthias has just said. It literally downloads Cake, sets up a couple of things to, and like creates a tools folder ready for population and things like that. But after those things have done, there's very little else to be done, and the bootstrapper never normally needs to get changed. But what we say is that the bootstrapper can be changed if you need to do something that's customized in your own environment. But once the bootstrapper has been run, it's really Cake is the kind of the important bit. Once that's on the system, that's the thing that you're actually executing. So the build, the bootstrappers for us very rarely need to change. So although we probably can take advantage of the PowerShell core version, I think it probably just makes sense. The people who are building on Mac and Linux are probably going to want to use a shell script anyway, because that's what they'll be used to using, I think.
We got to flip that around, though, and say, if you're running on Bash on Windows, does it matter?
That's true as well, yes. I mean, so, I mean, I think that's one of the experiments that Matthias has already done is to, using Bash on Windows 10, using that to build with Cake as well, and that we know that that works as well. So that definitely works on that flip side as well, absolutely.
Yeah, and also the issue with the PowerShell, like the core PowerShell, is that it's a subset. So there's a lot of, like, the current PowerShell install script from Microsoft doesn't work for it to install core. So it's all the dependencies that has to work also. Because currently the bootstrappers from CoreCLR are platform specific.
That's a good point, because I mean, at the end of the day, Cake is essentially just a wrapper around the tools that you want to use, .NET Core being one of those. So Cake itself doesn't install those tools. There's an expectation that those tools are either available through just a NuGet package that you can pull into the tools folder, or either that tool already exists on the machine that you're running on. So say you're using a Docker image or a Docker container rather that already has a .NET Core installed. But if you want to have Cake install the .NET tooling, which is what the when the NancyFX guys did their port to using Cake, they wanted .NET Core installed as part of the build so that gets bootstrapped every time. So they were relying on the installation script that came from Microsoft for that purpose. So yeah, if the installation tools themselves don't run on the PowerShell core, then there's a little chance of it getting installed and working properly.
Okay. All right. So and then because I've got those tools locally, like I've got a tools cake directory in my project now, does that mean like it's pretty well segmented? Meaning if I have multiple different things running on, you know, like I've got a build server with 90 different projects, or I've got a local dev thing, are they all kind of, I don't worry about like one instance of Cake having any impact on any of the others, do I?
They will be isolated within that repository. But you could share if you want. But the default standard is that you should be able to clone a repository and build it without thinking about dependencies.
Great. Okay. And then is the idea, so then I would exclude this with gitignore, like I would keep all my tools stuff out.
Correct. You don't want binaries in your repositories.
Great. Okay. Cool. And then you mentioned Docker in passing. Like is how do things work in Docker? Is it just kind of the same standard things? Is it
the thing with Docker that I found is really good is when you make your custom images. So I started to make some images with Cake pre-configured. And that makes it really easy because then you basically just Docker run in the current folder and it will launch Cake within that container and build whatever in the current folder. And that's really cool because then you just pull down an image and tag with a Cake version. So I can, now when I do integration tests, I can test different versions of Cake. We just do Docker run and Cake and then call off the tag the version. So I think that's the way when you use Docker containers, everything's pre-configured and you don't need the bootstrapper, basically.
Mm-hmm.
That's really good because I'm currently do a lot of tests on Nano server. And that's there you don't have a lot of, it's very stripped down OS. And then it's good to have a pre-configured because then it's very slim and light.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one, and I'm no Docker expert at all, but that's one thing I've definitely noticed is having a nicely pre-configured image like can save you a lot of headache. Like you can get something that kind of works, but it's really slow to download, or you see like apt-get pain or whatever. It's like it's nice when things are just kind of someone's put some time into making it work, right?
Yeah, and the Docker has tags. You don't have to worry about versioning because you can version the containers. And that way you can choose which version of the tools you can have pre-configured containers that you want to build. And that's been really helpful when doing integration tests because then I can test any regression and see if it's just change the tag of which container I'm going to use and then I can say, oh, it's fixed now.
Okay.
That's one of the things we've noticed with some of the CI builds that we do have for Cake. So, for instance, we've got a Travis build. So, as part of the Travis build, it needs to download and install Mono. It needs to download and install Cake and all the toolings and things that go with it. Whereas Matthias has recently been playing with the recently new CI system from Bitbucket called Bitbucket Pipelines. So it's got a custom Docker image, Docker container again, that has Cake already installed and all the bits that are required to install. So the build time is lightning fast. So where Travis might take, I don't know, 5 to 10 minutes to complete the build for Bitbucket Pipelines is something like sub 2 minutes in order to complete the build. And that's fully configurable because you control that image at that point.
Okay. All right. So I've run this bootstrapper. It's pulled down the tools for me. Now I've got a build.cake. So what's that's just C sharp code? That's just standard C sharp? What's going on there?
Pretty much. I mean, so there's the answer to your question is yes, it's C#. You can do anything you can do in C#, you can do within that build.cake file. There's a couple of additional things that we add, and that's kind of where we kind of come along with our what we refer to as our C# DSL for Cake. So we have a couple of what we call method aliases and property aliases that allow us to orchestrate the build process. So we have the task definition. So you define a task within your build.cake file, and then that task can have dependencies and criteria in order to control how the build is executed. But aside from that kind of DSL that we bring to it, it's just straight up C#. You can write any C# that you're used to writing in there.
Mm-hmm. The deal with build systems is you can write build systems in all kinds of, you can write it in JavaScript, you can write it in PowerShell, you can write it in XML. Please don't, but you know, I mean, and so a lot of it comes down to like what tools are more productive and readable. And that's definitely something looking at a cake file. I noticed this too, you know, looking at other blog posts over the years, people have written as they've kind of looked at it is it's like it actually is readable and it's something you can scan through and it all seems to make a lot of sense. Is that one of the kind of bigger, I mean, there's several selling points, but that seems to be one thing that people seem to gravitate towards?
For me, the way I've explained this in the past, I mean, and to put it in a little bit of context, I've been a long-term user of the Psaki build engine. You guys might be familiar with that. It's a PowerShell-based one, and I've been happy with that. The problem that I've had with that in the past is that team members, like at work or whatever, who are not as familiar with PowerShell, they end up not wanting to touch the build because they don't want to play with the PowerShell script. So you end up being the one guy on the team who's able to change that build script, and that's not a nice place to be. So the problem that they've had is that they've had this mental mind switch between coding in C# all day long for the application that they're building, and then a mental mind switch to something else that's kind of alien to them. Now, the jump between PowerShell and C# is not necessarily that big, but there is that mental mind switch. So for me, it's always that I want my build scripts to be in the same language that I'm coding in. So that's for that same reason, when we're doing an Angular application, we want to write our build scripts and using Gulp or Grunt because in JavaScript. So again, there's no mental mind switch there between the two languages. Or if you're doing, say, an F# application, then you might want to use something like Fake in order to do the build, because again, you don't have that mental mind switch. So for me, as C# is my primary development language, I also want to use C# for doing my build as well.
Okay. So then I've got this cake file, and so I looked, it seemed easiest for me to open it up like in Visual Studio Code. There's an add-in or an extension for that gives me the syntax highlighting.
That's correct. Yeah.
And that's the extent of it now, right? I saw there's an OmniSharp repo, but it's nothing really in there as of yet.
Not as of yet, no. I mean, we've spoken to some of the guys on the OmniSharp team, and we're trying to figure out how best to integrate with that. The slight issue that we have there is that because we've kind of brought along these method aliases and property aliases, and it's kind of extending the C# language, if you like, we need to do additional work to have the OmniSharp language service know what they are, so that you don't get any runtime errors when you're using the OmniSharp plugin within, say, Sublime or whatever text editor you're using. So it's on our radar, but it's not our immediate priority right now. The port to .NET Core is where we're focusing a lot of our effort just now, and then post that, we'll start looking into what other options that we have to bring some of the more sought after functionality within Cake.
Yeah, and basically, CoreSLR will open some other doors for us also. So that will bring a lot for free. So that's, I think that's the way why we focus on that.
Yeah, because as of right now, the add-in that we have for VS Code doesn't allow things like debugging. So we have a debugging story for the Cake scripts within Visual Studio right now. You can start the Cake process and then attach to the executing Cake script within Visual Studio. But as soon as we make the .NET Core port available, we've already had a community contribution to figure out how we can use the debugger within VS Code to do the same thing.
Got it. Yeah, that was actually my next question. So as far as debugging, I just attach to the process as it runs. Like, do I need to have the process pause or something in order to attach?
Well, basically, we have a dash debug switch to the KXE, and then we'll wait for a process like the debugger to attach.
Okay.
We also have a debug pre-process you can add in the script, and then we'll stop on the break on that point. So.
Oh, man, that's huge. I mean, just the ability to debug a build is... So I'm noticing that, like, in ASP.NET Core, like, moving from web config and you know, config file-based to code-based configuration in the startup and program is really helpful to step through and debug something and see what the values are.
But it's also, like, the important part is, like, it's almost like a cloud server sometimes where you build scripts because you run them somewhere else. So it's mm-hmm. also important to have analytics and logging that makes sense. So if you have an error on the build server, you can't single step there. So like sometimes like it's not only IntelliSense and debugging that's important. It's important that you also log things correctly and analyze things correctly and have like a structure of your code. Mm-hmm. Because then you will be able to debug. Like, if you understand the log message or the error message or whatever, then you can debug anywhere because you can't stop the build server or attach to the build server.
So what's the, the logging? Do you have kind of a default logging setup, or is it kind of more you integrate with, you can log using any .NET thing?
We have a built-in, like, abstraction layer for that, for logging. And also we will, any exception, we will log an appropriate return code of the exe. So basically, if you want to break the build, you just throw an exception.
Oh, okay.
So the default will, so if you're using something like AppVar, any information logging or error logging that you do would just go to the AppVar log, so you'd see it in the output on AppVar. But one of the recent additions into Cake was the ability to fully customize the underlying infrastructure of Cake. So if you wanted to rip out the current logging module that's just kind of writing to the standard output, you could have that re-implemented and send the log files off to wherever you wanted to, whether you want to store them in Logstash or somewhere else, you could certainly do that.
Ah, okay.
But the standard is to be logged to standard output and standard error. Any build system supports that on any platform, which is good.
Okay. So you mentioned port to .NET Core. Can you tell us how that's going? What kind of challenges? Is that moving pretty smoothly?
Yeah, it's basically we're on the end of it now. So I'm doing a lot of integration tests now to just make sure that we have almost like 300 methods to test in a DSL. So I started to add tests on each platform and. So we don't have broken because this has been the biggest refactor we've done with the core CLR bits. Mm-hmm. But now it's basically three issues left to solve, and then we're going to be happy to ship it. But it's been a journey, and there's still things you like when you go, you can be affected by kernel versions in Linux and things you didn't expect to mm-hmm. do, and. But it's good fun because we have one advantage that we have very few dependencies in the project. We have written a lot of code ourselves, and that made the port a lot easier because the biggest problems have been with dependencies,
yeah.
Where some things not available yet or things like NuGet core package isn't available. They depreciate that for a NuGet client package and things like that. So we had to rewrite. I'm really happy because we've been unifying around one scripting engine because currently one of the issues is that we have the Mono scripting engine on Linux and Mac and the Roslyn scripting engine on Windows. And there's slightly nuances that where they change and differ. So it's going to be good to be on the CoreCLR in that regard.
Okay. So I was looking at your dependencies. I did notice very few. I did notice you're using AutoFac Is there a lot of, like, does that go through the whole system, or is that kind of a minor implementation? Or
That's for dependency injection currently, and we used heavily dependency injection, but some things we replaced with our own, like the module system and things like that. So it's less, but we use it for dependency injection of our classes. So everything's nicely chained together, and we don't link directly to classes and things like that.
Okay. So how does that module system work?
It's very simple. Basically, you add a module folder in your tools where you have the cake exists, and it implements an attribute and an interface. And then it will basically, you say what the register, what it should replace. Like, it should replace the file system, or should it replace like the logging or things like that. And the first module, like we did, like Proof of Concept, is for long file name support. So we tested that. So a lot of cake is like, we have abstraction layers for things like the file system and copy files and logging and everything. So we can just replace parts, which has been a lot helpful in importing also and the cross-platform.
Okay. So any huge like frustrations or things other than waiting on dependencies to move to .NET Core? Were there any like huge platform specific issues? You mentioned like long file name support. I mean, are there, I don't know, any major like platform differences or things you've run into with .NET Core?
Well, there are some things that you don't think about at first. Like we just utilize the tools that we get. Like we utilize like MS Build or things like that. And even though Cake is cross-platform, not all tools are ported yet. So as an example, when I run on Nano server, which only has the core CLR, of course, we can't run tools that require the full .NET. But that's things that, or small thing like the NuGet XE isn't available for core CLR yet. So we have to implement that ourselves. And small things like that. But also on the, when you do like Nano server container based, then you can pre-configure that and have everything ready in place. And then it's really easy. So, but it's like, you notice some things like that aren't direct dependencies, but we do support a lot of tools and not all of those are available yet.
I think it's fair to say as well, we made a conscious decision, and this is more Patrick's direction as well. This was, we made a conscious decision to not adopt .NET Core early, so we didn't get into this. I know a lot of projects got into this situation where there were like kind of breaking changes between the betas and the early editions of .NET Core. We basically said we're not touching it until it's a little bit more grounded and we know where the it's not going to change that much. And then at that point, we were able to kind of implement in one big shot the port over to .NET Core. So some of the earlier problems that some other projects had, we didn't, because we specifically said, no, we're not going to do it just yet.
Yeah, it definitely seemed like timing correctly on moving. You know, I mean, there were a lot of breaking changes along the way.
Yeah. Now, that's not to say, I mean, there was a, we had early support for executing a .NET Core build through Cake, but Cake itself has only just recently been ported to .NET Core. But we were able to run the tooling through Cake quite early.
Yeah, so that's why we kind of like port an ANSI project can use us before we support Core CLR, because
exactly.
We support the Core CLR tooling.
Okay. So how do things work? Like you mentioned, something may not be supported in different places. I mean, do you do anything special to handle that, or is it really just kind of like logging the errors and you know, then I'm going into my build system and saying like, oh yeah, this is not available on this.
Well, tools is easy because it won't launch. Basically, you will get an error code from the operating system. There's some things that we basically if-defed in the Core CLR version, so it's not available. But most things have, I think, as we've written most of our code ourselves, it was very portable. But I think some things, if you like, copy over NuGet XE and gonna run that on a Nano server, will get bad image because it doesn't know what to do with that XE, but it will just fail and you will get error.
Okay.
The other part of that as well, I mean, there's kind of an assumption that as you're constructing the script, you're kind of going to know what tools run on what environment. So as you are defining the tasks that you want to execute within your build.cake file, there is a concept of criteria that you can add onto it. So you can say, for instance, let's say I wanted to run open cover for doing some unit test analysis or code coverage, I don't think opencover.exe runs cross-platform. So in the task definition for open cover, I could say something like, with criteria, is running on Windows. So that task would only be executed when you're running on a Windows system, and it would just be skipped if you're running on a Linux or an OS X environment.
And the same thing is for Mono, like MS Build just recently came to Mono. So we used X Build for building projects on Linux. So basically, just you had like an if statement, is running on Unix, then you use X Build, or else you use MS Build.
Yeah.
And that's the only difference in your script. It was still compiled and still everything. It's just which tool it chooses to launch.
Right. Okay. And a good example of that is for people listening along, but when I just did the kind of the getting started project, like you've got an example of that, like if running on Windows, MS Build, else X Build, like seems pretty straightforward.
Yeah. I mean, we do have an alias in there that is called the .NET Build, which kind of attempts to make that decision for you. So you just have a single alias within your task that is .NET build. And then internally to that alias, it will make that decision for you. I personally don't like that because I might want to have different options for MS build and X build depending on what I'm doing. So I tend to have the if statement within the task, but that's, again, everyone has their own opinions and they want to do things in their own way. So we have both options available there.
Okay. So like the kind of a foundational thing, I've got this task call and then I've got a name there. Is that like, say for instance, task clean or task build, is that just a label there, that name, or is it actually, you know, have some other meaning?
Well, you use that, it's a label of the name of the task, and you use that for like dependencies. So if you want to say some other task is dependent on that, you enter that label, that string. So if you want to say like, well, before I build, I want to clean, and before I run my unit test, I want to build. And then you basically, each task can set, have multiple dependencies. And then we will automatically reverse build that dependency graph and execute in the context where everything is done in the right order.
And then also, depending on how you construct your Cake script, you may have different entry points for the main Cake script. So as an example, for building Cake, we have a top-level task that is Travis and a top-level task that is AppVar. Because the reason that we have that distinction is because we use AppVar as our main CI system where we actually do our deployments from as well. So when we're running on AppVar, there's some additional tasks that we want to do. So as an argument to the bootstrapper, you can specify that target name as well. So in our travis.yaml file, we'll have call to the bootstrapper and then hyphen target Travis. And then on our appvar.yaml file, we'll have the call to the bootstrapper target appvar. So there's different entry points into the script as well.
Okay. So you've got this dependency graph thing. And I think that's kind of the, like, there's always like kind of a thing where you look at something and you're like, oh yeah, I could use Roslyn to hook some stuff together. And you know, like a naive thing, it sounds kind of simple, but then you get into this stuff of dependency graphs. And as I was looking at the source code, I was like, yeah, there's a little bit more going on. So like, how do you handle things like dependencies? Like, are you doing multiple threads at once? Does it kind of, or is it kind of run and wait for all dependencies to be satisfied? Like, how does all that stuff...
It's currently isn't multi-threaded because, well, we have to find a good way to do logging.
Mm.
It certainly would be possible to do it, but currently we want to do it sequentially but we do it in the dependency order. So basically what has no dependencies and start with that. And then, so it's basically looks at all dependencies and reverses this, it has no dependencies and executes in the order. So it fulfills those in the correct order.
Right. Okay. So this is actually, it's creating all the tasks and then, but it doesn't actually run them until I call run target at the end. Is
correct.
That correct?
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. So from a simple like developer point of view, I don't want to think about it. I just write a bunch of stuff and it works like, and I don't have to think too hard about it. I just make sure that I've got my dependencies defined and then you trust you guys to do the smart stuff.
Correct. I mean, cool. It's come up a couple of times that people want to spawn off multiple processes and do parallelize certain things because of the build that they're doing. It makes sense for them to be able to parallelize it in order to optimize how long the build takes. But as Matthias said, one of the core problems that we have there is finding a good story about logging those things and how they're executing at that point, because the last thing you want is having log messages coming from each of those parallel tasks all jumbled up together, because then from a debugging point of view, that becomes hard. So we want to come up with a good story around how to successfully log each of the parallel tasks and bring them back together that makes sense. But again, due to the other things that we've got going on, it's not a core focus, but it's come up at least a couple of times, and there is an issue about it on the GitHub page.
Yeah, and it's just C#, so there's nothing stopping you from doing like parallel for in a task.
Yeah.
So if you have a specific thing like upload X files, then you can do that in parallel. And that, like the parallel, that will handle like an aggregate exception at the end and things like that. So you can always fall back to C#.
Okay. All right. So then internally, are you using async await much, or is it?
We're not basically, we're seeing synchronous. So
okay.
We're not using any async currently. Well, we have to, that's one difference. Like the web client isn't available so we had to use the HTTP client, and that's async, but we're using it in a sync way.
Right. Okay. I mean, it's one of those things where, like, yeah, you want your build to be fast, but you also want it to be, it's more important that your build's reliable, right?
Yeah, and consistent. You want it to be same every time.
Yeah. Cool. All right. So I'm noticing here, like, you've got support for several different build systems, and you're basically like, you integrate with them, they spawn off into your process and run. Is that basically like, as I go into, say, Jenkins or whatever, I just set up my command line options so that, you know, whatever it is, Bamboo, Jenkins, whatever calls into your system, and then you return the correct things to them?
Yeah, correctly. You basically set the entry point in each build system, and usually that's like just like build ps1 or build.sh, and then you're done.
Okay.
So, but sometimes you want, like we have, like, app area differs from the rest of the systems, then you have a target specified. But in general, for seeing, like, regular builds, you just enter the bootstrapper, and then you're done.
But in addition to that, I mean, I think maybe what you're getting at, John, was almost every CI system out there has a set of environment variables that it configures as part of the build, and that contains information about the build number, whether it's a pull request, what the commit hash is, all those sorts of stuff, and they're all available somewhere on the build system. So one of the things that the Cake provides is a wrapper around that. So each build system, we configure what we refer to as a provider for each build system. So there's kind of then a strongly typed object that will give you the information back from the build system. So each build system has something like is running on AppFair or is running on Jenkins or is running on whatever build system it is. And then from there, you can go to the provider to say, okay, who was the committer that caused this build to kick off? What is the build number that AppVar thinks it is? Is it a pull request? So you can bring all of those pieces of information into the build script to then make an informed decision about what you want to do. So an example of that is when we're running on AppVar, we make an informed decision about if we're on the develop branch, we are pushing all of our NuGet artifacts to NuGet, to MyGet, sorry, which is where all of our development versions go. But if we're on the master branch, then we want to make an informed decision that actually we want to take those artifacts and push into NuGet at that point. So we can get that information from the AppVar provider within the script and then make an informed decision about how things proceed.
That's really handy. And then I notice in there, you've got some things in there like assembly info patching and stuff like that. So does that allow me then to, based on, you know, environment and you know, maybe my Git SHA or whatever, like I can add information about what build it is?
Mm-hmm. And we also have like tools like Git version that can do that. And so we have a lot of helpers for that.
Yeah. Okay. And I see also file hash calculation, which is
yeah,
nice
that's too. Essential because we publish to Homebrew, and then you need the file hash to be able to create a pull request for Cake to be able to go there.
Okay.
So, and also like pull request is really important because you don't want to push to MyGet if it's a pull request.
Right. Okay.
I don't think so. That.
What about unit test integration? Is that kind of similar to the build system, or how does that work?
It's similar in the sense that we have method aliases for all the common unit test projects that are out there. So whether you want to use XUnit, NUnit, or MSTest, we have an alias that allows the calling of those things. And then you can obviously configure the settings for each of those unit test frameworks. The slight difference being that we're not really expecting anything back from the unit test system as we would from the build system. So it's just a direct call to the unit test framework to run the tests on this DLL and then write the report to this location. So there's, like I say, there's built-in method aliases for all of the common ones. And then obviously, if there are other ones that we haven't got support for yet, then we have the add-in model that would allow anyone to extend the Cake DSL by providing additional aliases for any tool that they want to add.
Okay. And then if I want to fail my build, you know, if a unit test fails, then how does that work?
Well, basically we have a common tool class. So all tools, like NUnit or XUnit or MSBuild, have different return exit codes depending on if they're successful or not. So we will automatically fail the build if the XUnit test fails. You don't have to think about that.
Cool.
But because we return the exit code that's returned from the underlying tool, if you want to make an informed decision again about, okay, I don't know why you'd want to do this, but if you were happy to pass the build if five unit tests failed, but any more than that was a pass or a fail, you can make that informed decision as well and handle the return code that comes back from the underlying tools as well.
Cool. Okay. So then getting to publishing, there's a lot of different outputs you can do. So, you know, NuGet, you mentioned NuGet and MyGet, and kind of the integration there. Is this the kind of thing where as long as I have like a new spec, it's just going to handle all the pack everything up for me?
Well, for NuGet, we also have the ability to just do like your new app class, and you don't need a new spec. So you have both options. So we can wrap everything for you, or you can do use an existing new spec or existing CS profile. So for some projects, I just use the new spec, like the just new app class, and define which files, and you have that in a nicely typed C# class where it's documented. Or you can have, like, if you have ready new specs, you can use them also. And then it's different if you're on the Corsilar, you have the .NET pack thing you can use.
Okay, so trying to think through some of the outputs where I would use a NuGet package. I refuse to call them nupkegs. I know some people do. I just can't work with that. But so there's obviously like publishing to NuGet or MyGet where people consume them as packages. Mm-hmm. And there's things like Chocolaty where, you know, you may be packaging up an application. Okay. There's Octopus where you're using it for application deployment. So it could be website or whatever. Is there anything else that people use NuGet for?
Well, they use NuGet for tools and assemblies so in all different scenarios.
Ah, right. Okay.
But there are also scenarios where you run Cake on the deployment system. So we use a bunch of scenarios where they use like on Kudu in Azure, where they basically run the Cake script on the deployment server. So that's also a possibility.
Okay. And then you also have some other build outputs for things like, you know, Wix and Nullsoft or NSIS, I forget the actual Nullsoft installation system or install
something
script.
Like something like
that, yeah. Nullsoft, that goes back a ways. And then like compression and stuff. So this will just build me an installer then for my build, right?
Yeah. I mean, like I say, at the end of the day, all that Cake is doing is wrapping the underlying tools that you might already be using as part of your MSBuild script or as part of your PSACI script. So all we've got is really a strongly typed class that will allow you to define all of the options that you want to pass to that underlying tool. So whether for Wix, as an example, if you're calling into the heat.exe or the candle.exe, that's something that you would do normally either through your MSBuild script or whatever else. We're just giving you the option to define all of those property values in a nice clean way that you're kind of used to, and then at the end of the day it's just going to pass those same arguments through to the underlying exes and execute that process. So there's no real magic there. It's just that we're bringing it up a level in terms of abstraction layer, if you like. So rather than having to remember, well, what was the argument that you need to pass in for that? Is it a forward slash or a backslash or a single hyphen or a double hyphen? And what was the argument name? It's all defined within those settings classes that we have for each of the aliases that are all documented on the website. So that's really where the power really comes in.
Yeah, and also if there are like mandatory arguments that you like, or on the alias.
Yeah.
So you know what's mandatory for that each tool.
Okay. So, and then like some different advantages of that abstraction. One is I don't have to think about it and dig through the documentation and all that. But then theoretically, I could also have some portability too, right? So like you mentioned, you know, the NuGet or MyGet, but I could potentially say like, all right, I'm going to switch from Nullsoft to Wix. Like that's probably not a flip a switch, but it's at least concept count, like not too hard to think about. Is that true?
I think that's fair as well. I mean, the way that I would tend to build my Cake script up, you're defining the tasks as the elements that you're currently doing. So as Matthias mentioned earlier, you'd have a clean task, you'd have a build task, you'd have a unit test task, and I would have like a packaging task. So it might be at that point that my packaging infrastructure is using Wix. But if for some reason I wanted to switch to using something else, then the Cake script, the top level architecture of the Cake script doesn't need to change because you're still doing all of those things as part of that process. But that one task is the area that needs to change. So in there, you would change from using Wix to using Nullsoft to using Install Shield, whichever one you want to use there. But the thing that you're focusing on at that point is just the packaging element of the build.
Okay. So one thing that seemed a little like jumped out at me as a little different is the release note parsing. So this is parsing, is it markdown files or what am I doing there?
Let's be clear. There's a couple of things in there. So in Cake, out of the box, we have a release notes parser. So that's essentially taking a markdown file and extracting from that in a kind of a known format the version number and then kind of the bulleted list of the items that go with it. So there's normally a standard format where you'd have a single heading that is the version number, and then within an unordered list you'd have the things that went into that release. So that what the release notes parser is doing is trying to extract that and making it available to you for doing stuff with. And that doing stuff with might be, for instance, to take the version number from the heading and stamp that onto your assembly info file. And you might want to take the unordered list and put that into, say, the NuGet release notes or the chocolatey release notes, so that as part of your publish, you have that information and make that available. The other flip side of that, or the other extension points that we have for that, are two external tools called Git Release Notes and Git Release Manager. They do a similar thing to what the built-in release notes parser does, but they provide a little bit more functionality in terms of what you can actually do with those release notes. So there's multiple avenues that you can go within that route, but that's certainly something we do as part of our build process. Within GitHub, we use milestones and we use the issue tracker extensively to know what went into each milestone. So what we actually do as part of our final build is we use the Git Release Manager tool to take all of the issues that are assigned to a milestone, and that's what generates the release notes that we publish as part of our GitHub release. So that's our source of truth, if you like. We all of the items that go into the release notes are an issue on GitHub and assigned to a milestone so that we can track all of that through the... So that's a little bit of a process involved there, but we find it's a very easy way to kind of let people know what we're working on and what's coming up next.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, it's like getting rid of that grunt work where it's just kind of going through, finding that list, like finding... like.
I mean, it's taken us a while to get there, but we're now at a point where we, for our own Cake build script, once we do that final check into the master branch and we tag it, it's literally an end-to-end completion. There's the one manual step is to tag the release, to tag the GitHub repo. And after that, the release notes are generated, the assembly info files are stamped, the NuGet new spec files are populated with the release notes, the publish happens to NuGet, the publish happens to Chocolatey, our release notes are, or the actual release on GitHub is closed off, the milestone's closed off. It's literally everything happens now. There's one manual step, and that's just us, a final sanity check to make sure that things are going to work the way we want them to. And the release process after that is fully automated.
So, and then as part of that, there's the announcing, and I notice you've got like a Twitter bot and stuff. Like, so you've got set up for Cake, and anyone else could as well. You can tweet when a release goes out, right?
Well, we have multiple different communication avenues, actually. One is Twitter, to do a tweet based on the build succeeding. You can write to a Slack room. You can write to a Gitter room. What else? There's a HipChat one now as well. So, yeah, depending on how you want to announce that, those options are there now as well.
And those are add-ins. That's worth to mention because we have like an add-in ecosystem.
Yeah.
So basically, we have add-in preprocessor, so you can add basically any assembly that's available on NuGet and pull that in and utilize it in your build script.
But some of the add-ins that kind of within that process, we wanted that for our own build script. So the cake.twitter one is one that I've created. The cake.slack one is one that Matthias created, because those are the things that we wanted. But the kind of the stance that we take is that anything that is kind of core fundamental to a build process, likes of doing an MS build or doing a unit test or doing code coverage, those things are fundamental and we'd want them within the actual core of Cake. Anything else that is useful but not kind of essential, we'd want them as an add-in so that they're kind of separate and they can be revved up independently as well.
Just on the subject of add-ins, I mean, if you look, there's a long list of them. Are there any big ones that you feel like are missing that you would really like to see?
For me personally, not at the minute, no. There's always people who want to have, they'll use tools that I've never heard about and they want an add-in for their own purposes. But we like to think that the add-in system is to a point where it's relatively simple and there are enough samples out there that creating your own add-in is really quite simple. But I mean, I've just literally gone through a process of creating what I refer to as a fully generic build script now. So for each of the add-ins that I create, or that I've created, and there's seven of them, I've got the exact same build script that runs across all of those now. And the advantage that I now have is that if I want to add something into the build, like for instance, I've just added in the publishing of my code coverage metrics to coveralls.io. That's something that I added to one location, one NuGet package, and that automatically went out to all seven of those projects. So I'm at a point now where I've kind of got everything that I want personally, but there's always going to be someone comes along with their own tool and they want to add that into the Cake add-in ecosystem.
Yeah, and add is also great to start if you want to test something before. Then you can release it out to NuGet and you can test it in production. And if it's really good, you can elevate it to... Yeah. Be part of core also, so, and also great for like platform specific stuff that you want to reference as assembly, because we don't want to reference platform specific assemblies generally.
Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a digression there, but as you're talking about add-ins, so there's an interesting discussion issue on your repo. It's number 1136, and it's your question, Gary, where you say, how do we prevent add-ins from becoming stale?
Yeah.
And this is definitely a problem on any platform that allows add-ins and extensions is, you know, somebody's building their build script, they're all excited about it, they set up, you know, whatever it is, the Slack add-in, and then they, whatever happens, they move on to a different job, they get promoted, they get tired of it, whatever, and then they stop updating that add-in.
Yeah.
It's a hard problem. I mean, what are your thoughts kind of on how you go about dealing with that?
So we've kind of spoken at length, and there's lots of good discussion in that issue that you mentioned there. But so the upshot of it is that we, as the Cake team, we don't want to do anything that would stop someone creating an add-in. So we want people to contribute to the community, to extend it, to make it do what they want it to do. But what we want to try and do is we want to have some sort of preventative measures to stop that thing going stale, as you mentioned. So the bottleneck for that happening is really once that add-in's been pushed to NuGet.org, that's kind of where people expect to get it from. So what we want to avoid is let's take the Cake.slack as Cake.slack add-in. That was one that was created by Matthias originally. So it's unlikely to go away, but let's say Matthias walks away from the project and that NuGet package, he would be the only person who has access to that package. And we want to try and avoid that, because if someone does walk away from the community, is no longer involved, we want to be able to have the ability to push a new version of the package as and when required. So going forward, we're going to be asking the various different community members that we have to give the Cake user on NuGet to make them a co-maintainer of that NuGet package, so that at the very least, we have the ability to push a new version of the package if and when required. So we have that ability to step in. Downwind of that, we would also like, but this is, we're not mandating this and we're not trying to force people to do this, we would like to have all of the source code repositories exist under the cake.contrib organization on GitHub as well. But we're not trying to take people away from the project. We still want them to maintain it. We still want them to be in charge of it and in the direction of it going, of where it's going. But we also want to have that ability to, if required, step in and help. If there is an open pull request that's been open for a month and it hasn't been looked at, if we can get in there and do the merge and then do the push, then we can stop that from happening. Now, that's something that we've literally just started within the last couple of weeks. I've started the process by moving my own add-ins into that Cake Contrib organization, and we're going to be opening that up soon to invite other people to move their add-ins into there. But that's, like I say, I want to stress, that's not mandatory. We still want to encourage people to create their own add-ins, but we are trying to facilitate it in such a way that we can help out with those projects if they do become stale. But it's not a simple thing to fix, and there has been some valid comment back from the existing contributors about concerns about them losing access to things and all of that sort of stuff, and that's not what we're trying to do. What we're trying to do is make it so we have a path to make a change if and when required.
Yeah, that all makes sense. I mean, I know from the point of view of, like, I've created chocolatey packages, and then they've gotten stale, you know, yep. And somebody contacted me and said, hey, I can set this up as an auto build, and it's going to automatically build, and can I be a co-maintainer? I said, absolutely, yep. Yes, please. You know, I mean, I checked and made sure that I checked what other packages they're maintaining, and there were quite a few, you know, and I'm like, okay, yes. And so, and you know, I mean, it's good for the community and all that, but just in terms of the communication, I also get that you don't want anyone to feel like, oh, there's this huge gate in order to start getting involved too.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a delicate balance, but I mean, once we've got the Cake Contrib organization fully set up, we'll be creating some blog posts and some documentation around it, basically saying that if you want to create a cake add-in and maintain it yourself and do all that sort of stuff, we're not going to stop that, but look, this is where you can put it. You can put it into this central organization. You can have the support of the Cake team and the other community members to help out with those projects. So that's how we would like people to do it, but we're certainly not going to say, well, you're not getting to play if you don't want to go down that path. That's not what we're doing. But it's more about a preventative measure to do something if required, as opposed to trying to get a hold of someone retrospectively when there's an issue, because at that point, it's maybe too late.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, you know, we've talked about, you know, what are all the different features. You've talked about how you're using Cake. And then I looked a little bit at, you know, others, and you'd mentioned also Identity Server and stuff. So how, like, you mentioned that NancyFX, theirs was a more complex conversion. What were some of the things that were more difficult about what they were doing?
Well, some things were, like, there was the first big core CLR project that they ported. So there are things like assembly info patching is hard when there's no assembly info CS file. So
right.
That's the project JSON that we had to patch. And the small things, there's like there were breaking changes between preview 1 and preview 2 tooling. And so they had like, so it wasn't a lot of Cake issues, but initially they had a rake script. And that was like perfect example where they're basically like two people in the world that can maintain that script.
Mm-hmm.
And they never got, but just a couple of like hours from going Cake, they had the contributions to that script because, well, Nancy is a C# project. So everyone that sends pull requests knows C# generally. So that can be like a success story in a way, but it was a lot of problems. Like it was new with the tooling, and some of the tooling has changed between versions, and so it was a learning process too.
Okay. You know, one thing I did notice in their publishing stuff is that they're doing Git push, and their Git push stuff is basically doing a process start on the Git process. Is there anything, like, is there an add-in? Like, I would think maybe that would be something where you could have like a Git publish. Oh, and I see there's Git tools.
Yeah. Well, I've written a Git add-in also that uses libgitsharp.
Okay. So
that's an option too. But basically, we ported the rake script that Patrick helped a lot, and the Dancer team did that. So we did as much, because previously it was the non-core build pipeline. And
Got
we
it.
Went over to the core CLR pipeline, and ported from Rake to Cake and things like that. So this, you can, you're never like, you can, if you like, you can be like us and never be done with the build script. You can refine until it's fully automated. And I think many projects, they start with a release notes markdown file and they're happy with that. And then they go to like a Git version and a release manager. And so you can start very simple and you can refine to is fully automated.
Yep. Okay.
But on that point you just mentioned there, John, although we like to think within Kate we have a coverage of a lot of tooling now, there is always the fallback if there isn't a cake alias for something, there is always the option to just spawning a new process and passing the command line arguments as you would normally. So we have a cake alias for start process or start process with settings. So in the example, if for instance the cake.git add-in didn't have one of the git commands that you wanted it to have, you have the option of just spawning a start process and executing that command directly, if you like. But what we would say in that scenario is that we would look for people to, if there was something missing in the cake.git add-in, the ideal would be that they would submit a pull request to that cake.git add-in to add that additional functionality so that everyone can get the benefit of it.
Okay. Yeah. That, I mean, it definitely is nice knowing that I can always draw back to C# and I can always just spawn a process. Like, I'm never completely stuck.
So. Yeah, and you can always fall back to an assembly too. So that was like the initial assembly, like the patching of Project JSON was using Newtonsoft Yoast. Yeah. Because we can just do add in Newtonsoft like the JSON.net, and then we can use that. So you can, the good thing, like we have add-ins that are specialized that can extend the DSL, but you can also reference any .NET assembly that way.
Okay.
Which is nice. So you just pull down the assembly from NuGet.
Makes sense. Okay. And then you mentioned identity server. So their build script is pretty straightforward. Like this, you can just scroll through and it kind of makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, the identity server guys, they already had an existing Saki script that had, they'd already done the port, if you like, for doing the .NET Core build within the Saki script, but they wanted something that they'd then be able to execute on Linux and Mac. So they don't have the same complexity as the NancyFX guys in terms of multiple submodules and pulling in various things and packaging it all up. It's a fairly condensed build where it was kind of just a clean build and then a final kind of a package step, I think. So their one was, let's just say it was a lot easier to port that one than it was to do the NancyFX one, but that's no slur on either of the project teams. It was literally NancyFX just has more stuff that they wanted to do, and the identity server one was a reasonably straightforward port that we were able to get done over a couple of hours Skype session.
Okay. Well, I was thinking about wrapping up soon, but there's one thing that's just always interesting to me, which is like aisle merge and aisle repacking and stuff. And I have to ask about that. Like, what kind of, is that a common thing that people are doing, is using aisle merge in a build? I mean,
well, it's quite common among the tools that people want one XE. So I think I see a lot of like the people that build tools using Cake, they use the aisle merge or the aisle repack to have one XE available. So that's a full option. We have typed aliases for it also.
Okay.
I mean, that's not something I tend to use. I use there's an add-in for Fodi that does that directly as part of the MS build step. So it will automatically look at any references that you've got and do the IL merge as part of the actual MS build step. So I don't tend to use the IL merge independent tooling. I use Fodi to do that work.
At the risk of sounding stupid, I don't think any, Fodi included, none of those work with .NET Core yet, do they?
I don't think so, no. You'd have to chase Simon Krop on that one. I don't think so, okay. No.
But .NET Core also has the future .NET Native things. That would be interesting. Because then we will be able to pack into one linked XE. So they have that on the horizon too.
Yep. All right, so I'm looking milestone-wise. So you've got version 16. Looks like you're closing in on that. Is that the next kind of big release?
Yeah, yep. That's the core Stellar release.
Okay, cool. And then after that, you've got 17 already, kind of some milestones at least listed. I mean, what's on the horizon after .NET Core release?
We have a fairly let's just put it this way, that there's a fairly exciting development coming out in the pipeline, but we're not quite ready to talk about it yet. Patrick has been furiously working on something that I think a lot of people will like, but we're not quite there to discuss that yet, just yet. So it's just a little teaser for the upcoming release after the .NET Core release. But let's just say it's very cool.
Cliffhanger.
Indeed.
All right. Well, I think we've covered it in pretty good detail. Any more, Kevin? Or any more questions, Kevin?
I don't think so. I just, you know, I have this cake and nougat stuff. I'm getting hungry. I got to go get something to eat.
You're throwing some chocolate in as well.
Yeah, exactly. How about you guys, Matthias, Gary, anything else to add or things that we didn't cover or, you know, things you're going to be, you know, speaking at soon? I saw a DDD coming up for you, Gary.
Yeah, I'm talking which one's the first one? DDD Reading at the start of September. So that's the, I don't know how familiar you guys are with the DDD events, but they started out in the UK and they've kind of spawned off to Australia and various other places now. But DDD Reading is where the DDD movement started. So that's the first time back in Reading in about 5 years. So I'm heading down there at the start of September to do a talk on Cake. And then the DDD North event, which is in start of October in Leeds, I'm doing a talk on Cake there as well. So yeah, pretty excited about going to both of them.
Very cool. All right. Well, thanks a lot for taking the time to talk about this. This is really exciting, and it's just I always kind of like, as I'm going through, I'm looking at like, wow, I think I would use this, and you know, and this is definitely is something where it's like, oh, build scripts are just not something that I want to spend time on. And looking at these, it's like, yeah, I wouldn't be upset if someone assigned me writing a build script task and I was using Cake. So that's something. Cool.
And we love to hear from users because we have like the Gitter chat room and we're on Twitter and everything. So just raise an issue or jump in on the Gitter chat and if you have any questions, and we're happy to answer them. Yeah.
Great. Okay. And of course, as always, we'll have all the links in the show notes, and you can go to cakebuild.net to find out more, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
All right. Well, that wraps up another episode of Herding Code. We'll talk to you again soon. The end. Okay. It's time for the update at the end that I promised you. There's a lot of stuff. I'll do my best not to sound like a pharmaceutical commercial. First of all, there's the Cake Contributions organization. That's Cake Contrib on GitHub. That's now in full motion. So it's a common place where people can put their Cake add-ins or modules if they want to. And they still maintain and, for all purposes, own the code, but they also get access to resources like CI services, common build scripts, and they get better exposure. Also, the Cake core team can assist. They can help merge pull requests and fix issues and push to NuGet if the add-in gets stale or if the author is just too busy with life in general. And so far, it's been really well received, and quite a few projects have already moved over. So the next thing is 0.16 release with .NET Core support. So in addition to full .NET framework support, Cake now supports .NET Core. That's .NET Standard 1.6. And there have already been a few patch releases following this. So as of October 11, they're at 0.16.2. And then also, due to adding .NET Core support, it's possible to debug a Cake file using Visual Studio Code. That's pretty cool because now you get cross-platform debugging support for Cake, and there's a blog post showing how to do that. Another thing they've added is Frosting. Frosting is a standalone .NET Core runner and host for Cake. So I went back and forth with them a little bit to clarify it and make sure I understood it. And so here's what it's doing for you. Cake uses the Roslyn scripting API, and it provides a DSL for fetching dependencies like tools and add-ins. Frosting uses the .NET Core SDK to handle the dependencies, and your Cake build script is really just a .NET Core console app. So both of these are running on top of the same cake.core and cake.common packages. They're just being hosted and run differently. And so if you use Frosting, this gives you some advantages. You've got full Visual Studio IntelliSense and tooling support. It's a .NET Core console app. And you can use the standard methods to package and publish as NuGet package, etc. So it's just straight up .NET Core console app. So Frosting also gives you .NET CLI tools, so you can call .NET Cake. So I can definitely see advantages to both, but it's nice to have another option. You can script using the standard Cake DSL, or you can use Frosting if you want a console application type build script for you. Another thing they've added is Cake for Yeoman support. So this adds a Yeoman generator, which makes it easy to bootstrap Cake, and it includes a build script, bootstrapper scripts, and config files in the current directory. So you just type yo cake and you've just added Cake to your project. There's also scaffolding support to create a new .NET Core project using Frosting for Yeoman. So you'd say yo cake colon Frosting. So that's pretty cool. Then one final thing they've added is Cake for Visual Studio support. So this is their first release of the Cake for Visual Studio extension. This includes syntax highlighting for Cake scripts. It includes Task Runner Explorer integration, so you can kick off, you know, build specific build steps inside Visual Studio in the user interface. There's also bootstrapper commands in the build menu. So right off the build menu, you can call into Cake. There's also project templates for things like Cake add-ins, Cake add-in unit test projects, and Cake modules. So, whew, that's quite a bit of stuff. So thanks a lot to the Cake team for getting back to me and working with me on getting this list all together. And that's it. Go do some Cake business. Let them eat cake. I like cake.